WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. In Chicago, at least 99 deaths have been confirmed in Maui's wildfires, and Hawaii's governor says that number could climb as crews still search hard-hit Lahaina. FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell says their focus now is on providing shelter and financial relief to survivors.
We do have adequate funding to do the response that we're doing right now, but we will need additional funding to ensure that all of our other recovery projects can continue and not get delayed until the next fiscal year.
KCBS-TV's Rutabay Shabazi is in Maui.
Frustrations mount about why the alarm system, which was a very sophisticated system, didn't sound as people ran for their lives and flames engulfed Lahaina. Also, we're hearing the fire hydrants ran out of water and people are not able to get back in and see their loved ones and what's remaining of their home and their belongings.
Raging wildfires in Texas prompt the governor there to issue a disaster declaration for nearly 200 counties. Reporter Chris Fox.
So far, over 500 fires have burned about 70,000 acres in Texas. More than 95 fire departments from over 75 cities have been deployed to respond to the wildfire activity across the state. Governor Abbott saying he issued the disaster declaration to surge the deployment of additional resources to the 191 counties currently experiencing dangerous conditions. According to the Texas A&M Forest Service, wildfire activity is expected to continue as high temperatures, heavy winds, and severe drought conditions persist. Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
A grand jury in Georgia has heard testimony in the election subversion investigation into former President Trump. Also, there was a brief appearance on a Fulton County website of a list of criminal charges against the former president and that prosecutors later disavowed. That document was quickly withdrawn. The Navy's chief has relinquished command, but his replacement is still being held up in the Senate. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says it's time for the Senate to confirm this and other nominations.
The sweeping hold is undermining America's military readiness.
Nominations are being held up by Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville, who's protesting the Pentagon's abortion travel policy. A heads up for those who may be on popular weight loss drugs.
People who take drugs like Wegovy or Ozempic for weight loss may face life-threatening complications if they need procedures that require empty stomachs for anesthesia. Doctors say they're seeing an increase of patients on the weight loss drugs who inhaled food and liquid into their lungs while sedated because their stomachs were still full. This even after following instructions to not eat up to 8 hours in advance. The drugs can slow digestion so much that it puts patients at increased risk for the problem called pulmonary aspiration, which can cause dangerous lung damage, and even death.
This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. There's ongoing areas of flash flooding in the city of Waukesha. East Moreland and Delafield Street is one of those areas, with other flood-prone intersections also under several inches of water. Earlier rainfall rates were near 2 inches per hour, with a flood watch running through 11 tonight. Police say to avoid normally flooded areas and to not try to drive through floodwater. There's also concerns for communities along Lake Michigan.
A beach hazard statement is also in effect through Tuesday morning, as life-threatening waves of 4 to 8 feet and dangerous currents are expected on Lake Michigan. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
The timing of the traffic tie-up due to the president's visit tomorrow isn't officially known yet. President Joe Biden is visiting a wind turbine company with offices near the Brewers ballpark on Canal Street. We think the event is happening early in the afternoon. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
We spend $500 on our infants and toddlers on average. If you go to the other countries, you're talking about $11,000 on average in Europe and the other developed countries. It makes a difference. They end up spending less on their K-12 system. They end up spending less on their colleges. They end up spending less on jail.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday mornings 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
It's good for the economy. It's good for the soul of the nation.
Yeah, but he hasn't gone down to the border like Tim Scott to stare at the water and pretend he gives a damn. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Indictment Watch. Evidently, we're ticking down the minutes to the Georgia indictments. And, you know, earlier today, thought they were there. The website claims they were there. Not so much. But the thing that gets me, is it's Indictment Watch. Here we go again. And what I love is I love hearing the right lose their minds. For instance, I think my favorite quote of the day was from the Washington Post. Where they wrote, inside the D.C. jail, defendants being held in January 6th related cases say they are trading legal theories on how Trump's case could affect their own and joking about which empty cell could house the 45th president of the United States. Now, that's interesting because, you know, those are the most ardent fans. Those are the ones who drank the Kool-Aid. Those are the folks who, you know, bought the T-shirts and wore the hats and all that. And, you know, beat up policemen and destroyed property. And, you know, but, you know, because they were just doing what the president told them to do. Find it interesting that they're joking about which cell he'll be sitting in, which is, I don't know, good for the base's morale. Just kind of throwing it out there. Now, as I said, there was the moment this morning when there was indictment supposedly issued on the website of the Fulton County courthouse. Evidently, the clerk said that the potential indictment of Trump that circulated was fictitious, which means, in my world, it's the one. quite potentially, who knows? But we're ticking down the minutes. Could happen at any time, which is always fun. It's always good to have. And look, if democracy's going to hell in a handbag. If the end of an era is happening, if this wonderful experiment of self-governance is going to not exist anymore, you might as well. What was that guy that ran for governor down in Texas when he was talking about rape? If it's going to happen anyway, you might as well just enjoy it. Yeah, he said it. Now, my mind's not there, but I got to find something in this that is not going to make me lose my mind and being crazy as and angry as I see the folks on the right. Because understand, I'm enjoying the freak out of the folks on the right because they, I think maybe just a little bit, are seeing that justice is coming, potentially. Now, again, I was never on the Mueller's coming bandwagon. I'm saying, well, if what I'm hearing is true, I was never on the Trump's going to resign bandwagon. I don't have a lot of faith in others. I have faith in us and we the people. I have the ability for us. And this is why I say Trump has to be running for president in 2024, because we the people have to overwhelmingly send him packing. But, you know, seeing him in an orange jumpsuit, I don't know. It's been interesting to watch. Now, the judge on, was it Friday? Said don't do any of your normal shenanigans. Don't harass or incite or intimidate anyone. And what does he do? Well, he's testing the limits of those bounds. Because evidently he went after not just the judge, said some really nasty things about her, said that on his Truth Social this morning that Judge Chutkan was very biased and unfair. And he also claimed that she obviously wants him behind bars. And I don't know that any of that is true, but that's like one of those things going, she doesn't like me. Yeah. So there's that. Also, there's the talk of some comments he made about Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, who evidently testified, which he truthed out today that Jeff, what was it? Was it Jeff's a bad guy? Jeff shouldn't testify. Oh, here it is. I'm reading reports that failed former Lieutenant Governor of Georgia, Jeff Duncan, will be testifying before the Fulton County grand jury. He shouldn't. I barely know him, but he was right from the beginning of this witch hunt a nasty disaster for those looking into the election fraud that took place in Georgia. So going to be interesting to see if Judge Chutkan's going to do anything about it, going to hold him responsible for anything. It's interesting that this is where we're going. And you knew this was going to happen. You knew this was coming. The question then becomes, where does Trump go? Where does the Republican Party go if Trump isn't there? Because they're in a major disaster kind of moment without their key guy. Because if you're watching what's going on in Iowa, there ain't much left of the grand old party. And for me, I'm waiting for the rats to completely jump ship and the party to implode as a whole. Because understand, when the indictment came down with the six co-conspirators, I said from the beginning, and look, I'm no expert, but it just seems like the door's open. You could be 1 through 6. Not saying you are. And there are a lot of people who may have fit certain criteria, especially 5 and 6, that are going, hey, I don't want to go to jail. Trump's not going to raise money off the flock to keep me out of prison. Maybe I'm going to flip. And it's going to be interesting to see who the singers are. But for me, as I'm looking at this moment, the country's in an interesting spot. Because if you watch some of the comments coming out of Iowa, because there are a bunch of people going down just to troll Trump supporters at this point, going, you know, what if he murdered somebody? And they go, well, I'd still vote for him. Because this is now no longer about politics. It's not about making people's lives better for some. It's about, you know, they bought the T-shirt. They're wholly invested. This is who they are. This is their identity. And as I've been saying for a long time, these people have been angry for a long time. And the question then becomes, what do we do with them once Trump goes down? Because I'm telling you, in one of these indictments, if not all of them, because it's all right there. Let's go to the phones. Got Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are you today?
Hello.
Steve, what's on your mind?
Yes, I want to make a couple of points, and I too agree with you with regard to Trump. I mean, at some point, something here is going to stick. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to be convicted of every count at the state and federal level, but I mean, some of these things are just by virtue of statistical analysis going to stick. And at which point, you have to ask yourself as a Republican, okay, how many times are we going to hitch our wagon to this guy before we realize that this is ridiculous? I contend that we will have had a decade of Donald Trump, beginning in 2015 and ending when Joe Biden takes office for his second term and in 2025. And that will have given us the decade that was defined by Donald Trump for good and bad. And at which point, I think the Republican Party, unless they're absolutely insane, are just going to divest themselves entirely of Trump and Trumpism. And to the extent that they may have to suffer some setbacks, because there are people who will be devoted to him, just like followers of Charles Manson were loyal to him to his death.
It's an interesting choice, but okay.
There will be people who will go to their graves. They're 40 years old now. They'll be 40 years hence when they will go to their graves, asking somebody to say something good about Donald Trump at their eulogy. And, as you pointed out, this is no longer about politics. It's about culture. It's a kind of quasi-cult following. So, this is where the Republican Party is. And I do this for a living, so I will tell you what Republicans in leadership positions won't say to the masses, because, again, they need that base turnout to vote for their candidate. And that is, that, as you pointed out, they're sort of a rudderless ship at this point. They've got a guy who is not likely to be able to win a general election. It's not as if he's done anything in the last 3 years to rehabilitate his image, and now he's facing indictments on the state and federal level. Additionally, his capacity to raise money from his followers has diminished significantly. So unless you believe that Donald Trump is willing to go into his own kick, as it were, to fund this presidential election cycle, then he's going to be at a huge disadvantage compared to Joe Biden going into this. So and beyond that, there's a mainstream Republican Party, the old sort of neocons, the corporatist Republicans. They like stability. Donald Trump does not bring stability to a society. Stability elevates markets, keeps everything nice and stable, and creates an environment in which they can sell things to people, which is what a lot of Republicans love to do in terms of bottom line. And so, Donald Trump is not their idea of anything that they want in terms of their party going forward. But again, they need that base, so they're torn. They're going to have to rip off that Band-Aid either quickly or slowly, but it's got to come off.
Yeah.
And now the question is, what do they do?
And what does it look like afterwards? Because, look, at the end of the day, you're still talking about at least 30, possibly 40% of the electorate is in that camp. And I would say a hard 30% are the dyed-in-the-wool. They've probably tattooed Trump's name to their backside. That there's no going back.
Oh, absolutely. And to some extent, this is reflected in terms of the larger global society. You and I are about the same age, and we came of age during a time when the Cold War had come to an end, and we thought that that this was a new era in human history. That Western liberal democracy had triumphed, and that it was only a question of when the world would be integrated into a giant, economic system that was reliant on one another, and underpinned by the notion that people that trade with each other don't shoot with each other.
Yep.
I mean, don't shoot at each other.
And boy, were we wrong.
Yeah, we were wrong, because at some point, the nonsense of the superstitious nonsense of nationalism and xenophobia and all of these other things that drive us, it turns out that there are a percentage of people out there who are incapable of leading themselves. They would rather give over their power, the power of their lives, to a strong man, thinking that they know better than they can do for themselves in terms of having to make decisions as voters.
Well, but here's the thing, Stephen, if I could stop you here for a second, because this is a failure of the Clinton era, in my view, because in the 80s and in the early 90s, I was back then saying, look, we can't sustain these massive job losses and just say, go get educated, because you're going to lose people. And I think we're in this position largely because the working class of this country got so badly screwed by those ideas that we thought were liberalizing the world and, whip a little trade on them, as George Carlin used to say, and make people our friends by giving up our jobs. without taking care of people. I think a lot of this was created by that instability, by that pain and suffering that families had to endure because there wasn't anyone there to help them.
Oh, yeah, no, you're absolutely right in that regard. And it was just this perfect storm because along came a Donald Trump in the wake of, you know, so a little bit of historical perspective. Donald Trump got his party's nomination at a time when the party was defined by George Bush Jr. and everything that came with that, all the baggage, the two wars, the greatest economic collapse since the Great Depression. So exactly who were you going to tap to vote for that party? You know, because the other neocons running in that election were pretty much George Bush Jr. 2.0. So and that certainly conservatives in America had been disillusioned by that sort of republicanism, that brand of conservative. But here comes Donald Trump, who's prepared to tell you anything you want to hear. Your grandfather's coal mining job, I'm going to bring it back to you, as if that was ever going to happen. You know, all the nonsense and ridiculous promises that he made. And it's, I'm just amazed that, you know, none of these things were anything that he could deliver. I've been waiting 8 years for the Donald Trump health care plan, you know, that never materialized. But his supporters just won't concede that, you know what, all of those promises that he made, none of them came true. And I'm sorry, but, you know, he doesn't get credit for an economy that you inherit from the Obama administration. I mean, you know, so again, this is what happens when you have low information voters. Yeah. And let's face it, that's his base. People who aren't terribly well educated, aren't terribly well informed, who live in an echo chamber as far as where they get their information from. I mean, you know, they believe that JFK and Jr. and Donald Trump are going to save America. I mean, you know, how do you communicate with people like that?
You don't. That's why you have to reach out to the other people, get them active, engaged, and the sane and the rational amongst us must step forward. And this has got to be that moment. So let me ask you this, lastly, because I keep saying I think Trump has to be the nominee. I think he has to lose at the ballot box. I think we, the voters, have to reclaim this wonderful experiment of self-governance. Do you agree with that? Or are you, as some people are worried that he could win? And I'm worried he could win. But I think for the good of the country, he has to be defeated.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think he can win. Like I said, I don't think there anything about the last few years has made him any more desirable candidate. And quite frankly, I think Joe Biden has done a better job than many people have thought he could.
Much better than I thought he would.
And yeah, exactly. And you know, for many people who don't know it, Republicans have been hoping to run on, you know, some sort of economic policy failings of the Biden administration. Well, guess what? That hasn't happened. It doesn't look like we're going to have a recession. Unemployment is low. Confidence is higher than it's been in 2 years in terms of the economy. So things are returning to normal post-COVID. So if they were planning to run on that, forget that. That's not the formula to win. And again, even assuming that you had a less than optimal economy, I mean, how is voting for Donald Trump going to make that better? So I agree with you. I think he needs to lose. The process needs to play out. And we need to, as a country, in the same way that we got through COVID and past COVID and put it behind us, we need to put Donald Trump behind us.
I'm right there with you, Steve. I appreciate the call, buddy. Good stuff. Look, he's spot on. We got the smartest callers. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, David Brooks had an interesting comment. he had an interesting column. How America Got Mean was the title of it. And it's one of these things where you go, well, you know, I can tell you how it happened. And this goes back to what we were talking about a minute ago. What happened is you know, we lost, you know, millions of manufacturing jobs. Communities were you know, decimated. And, you know, when we did our Working Class Heroes radio tour, we went through a lot of those places that even all these years later, they're still struggling to recover. And, you know, you take all of that anger and that and understand, you know, 40 years of Limbaugh and Hannity and right-wing blather has created an anger class. The idea is, you know, whatever outrages sells, you know, the equivalent of, you know, television, if it bleeds, it leads. If it outrages, you know, this is what we're going to go with. If it gets people all worked up and angry, because that's what motivates, right? You know, it's much easier to direct people who are afraid or really ticked off than people who are happy and living a good life. So you go to those aggrieved and you give them the red meat. And you say, yeah, them over there. You rile them up. You get them all bunched up in the panties. And you say, go. Go get them. As Trump did on January 6th. The right has understood this for years. And it's always liberals. It's always the LGBT community. It's always some the border. And when they need to pull some of that out, like I haven't heard MS-13 thrown around in a while. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for, you know, Fox and all them to go, be afraid. They're coming. But, you know, Brooks had this article on, you know, this idea of, you know, restaurant owners having to throw people out of their restaurants and, you know, nurses, you know, leaving the profession and educators leaving the profession. And the reason this stuck with me today is over the weekend, I happened to go to the local grocery store and I don't do, full disclosure, I don't do much shopping. I'm not a big fan of stores. I'm not a big fan of shopping. It's not my thing. I'm grateful to my wife that there's food in the house because she deals with all of that. Because I don't put up with nonsense easily. And I'm in the checkout line. I'm waiting, and there's a woman behind me who's just losing her mind that there, you know, at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, there's only one checkout person. I'm shocked there's even one because they've got all these automated things, and I refuse to do that. So there's the one, and I waited a couple of minutes, and this woman is just losing her mind behind me, literally losing her mind. And I started talking to the cashier, and I'm going, how do you deal with this? You know, how do you deal with the kind of treatment that you get from these horrible customers? And she then told me about, you know, the place has a high turnover rate. You know, they're churning through people constantly because nobody wants to work in that environment. The wages are terrible to begin with. I mean, it's, you know, it's hard to get people in when you're talking about low wages to start. But then to have to put up with, all of the craziness of people, it's one of those things where you just go, you know, I don't think I want to deal with people. I don't think I want to do this. And this is what this person was telling me. And explaining some of the things that have gone on. And again, you go through the last 40 years and you figure out, you know, all along the way, what is the right-wing message been? You know, tear down institutions, attack, 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 especially individuals. And we've, as a society, have lost respect for anyone, let alone ourselves. And it's one of those things where, you know, I've often said, there's part of me that blames social media because social media allows us to be the worst version of ourselves, you know, out in cyberspace. Now, sadly, we've just turned into the worst versions of ourselves. This idea of distrust and disdain of not just institution, but each other. This is what the Trump era has finished off. We were on this path. We were heading in this direction. It was just Trump who kicked the door off the hinges and said, absolutely go. Go be as horrible to each other as you want, because that's good for them. As long as we're at the supermarket yelling at each other, and then the woman yelling at the cashier, who has absolutely no control how many of her there are in that facility. It's crazy. And you know what happens is we end up eating each other. They end up not being able to get anybody. So, hey, we're going to have to automate because nobody wants to work here. It's a horrible snowball that I got to go, you know, the wealth class of this country is just sitting smiling at us over because we're literally eating each other. This Trump indictment, which, oh, by the way, just came down in Georgia. I haven't looked at it yet, but evidently there is an indictment that has been brought down, and the grand jury has returned an indictment in the Trump case. So that's going to be, we'll figure out what that is. But, and I guess there are multiple charges for several defendants, including Trump and several close allies. So that's going to be, well, I guess what we're going to be talking about the whole rest of the week, unfortunately. But for me, the idea that we just can't seem to be nice to each other is really freaking crazy. And it's working to the benefit of the wealth class because they're going to automate. They're going to privatize. They're going to do all this horrible stuff. And we will have asked for it. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. That was the day Michael Siegel, business agent for New York City's Local 3 IBEW, announced the lights would be going out on Broadway for a half an hour. Electricians had been on strike for nearly a week to protest Consolidated Edison's refusal to employ union electricians for work on its new waterside plant. The company claimed it could only use members of the Brotherhood of Edison Employees, an independent union. The walkout also affected electricians at area construction sites and at 25 defense contractors across the city. The union had agreed to exempt electricians at the Brooklyn Navy Yards, where the strike held up work on 4 battleships. Also, the IBEW allowed electricians at Ford Instrument to return to work, given they had orders for $100 million in defense instruments. Siegel announced that at 9 p.m. the following evening, maintenance men not on strike would pull the switches on all signs in Times Square in sympathy to bring attention to their plight. After the half-hour blackout, the IBEW continued to fight injunctions brought by the New York Electrical Contractors Association. Harry Van Arnsdale Jr., business manager for Local 3, declared the blackout had been more successful than they had hoped. He characterized the switch-off as a blackout for enlightenment. Naval officials complained, however, that the strike held up vital defense projects. Newspapers noted that Broadwayites suddenly noticed the moon when the estimated 10 million watts of super lighting was turned off. A Times Square veteran noted it was the darkest since 1918 when a Zeppelin raid alarm caused a blackout. The strike was called off a week later when Con Ed acknowledged its previous agreement with the IBEW. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Ohio voters scored a big election victory for women's rights last week. It was a tricky vote, too. Deceptively couched as a statewide referendum to approve a little technical change in the procedure for approving statewide referendums. How boring. But Ohioans figured out that it really was a big vote on an underhanded ploy by right-wing Republicans to block the right of women to make their own reproductive decisions. Not boring. So, in a huge turnout, a whopping 57% of voters said yes to women and no to the tricksters. Yet the referendum actually did encompass a procedural issue that's an even bigger political story than the election results, namely, the GOP's ongoing attempts to rig election rules so its extremist minority can, quote, win without getting a majority of the votes. Background: a state constitutional amendment guaranteeing the right to abortion is already set to be voted on this November in Ohio. Right-wing Republican leaders, though, fear that more than half of Ohioans will support that amendment. Thus, last week's referendum was their desperate attempt to win by losing, specifically by decreeing that, hocus-pocus, constitutional initiatives must get 60% approval to become law. Yes, a 40% minority of voters could nullify the majority will of the people. This is Jim Hightower saying this gaming of the system by devious Republican officials and far-right extremists has become their core political strategy across the country. It's actually a deeply embarrassing admission by them. They're conceding that they are now captives of ideological extremism and outright nutballism, making their party so completely out of touch with the American majority that they can't win honestly. So they've become the anti-democracy party, acting as rabid political veterinarians out to fix democracy by neutering the power of the people.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Arkansas has joined the Florida gang. Evidently, the Arkansas Department of Education has decided that no more AP African American Studies courses. And again, this is another one of those moments where you go, and who's behind all this? How much big money is pushing this? But it's been reported, and unlike with every other AP class on offer, the state would not cover the $90 cost at the end of the year for the test of giving the students the opportunity to qualify for college credit. This, again, is another one of these weird moments where if you're a teacher, you know, what do you teach in this day and age? You know, as we're now seeing all of this stuff coming out of Florida, which you know is part of a national game plan to destroy public education. It's not even really about the curriculum. It's about destroying and privatizing and profitizing public education. But here to share some thoughts, someone who knows much, much more about this than I do. I've asked my good friend Mark Weber to come and share some thoughts. He's a special analyst for education policy with the New Jersey Policy Perspective. He's also a lecturer at Rutgers University on education policy, music teacher, and one of the greatest bloggers out there. You can see his stuff at jerseyjazzman.blogspot.com. Mark, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick. I was just saying it's been a while and I love coming on. So it's always a treat. Thank you for having me.
Well, what better time when public education is being under attack from every direction and you've got crazy people wanting to make policy and you've got a lunatic talk radio host who is now going to be in charge of history for educational videos in Florida and who knows where else. What could possibly be the reason that I reached out to you?
What could be a better time? Maybe what could be a worse time, right? When you're a teacher or when you've got kids, you think the summer, that's downtime, right? That's not when anything happens at school. But the last month has just been crazy town. There's just one ridiculous thing after another, and sometimes it's hard to keep them straight. You were talking in the previous segment about people who work in retail and how like it's hard to get people to do that job anyway because it's a tough job, and then you keep piling things on top of people and you wonder how much more they can take. And I was thinking about that with this thing in Arkansas. So AP I think most of your listeners know, but just in case, the advanced placement courses are college level courses that are offered to high school students. And they're a great deal because you can get actual college credit in high school, not have to pay college tuition for it. And a lot of times it sets you up to be admitted into a more competitive school if you have those credits. There are some things we can argue with about whether AP is exactly the best way to do this. And people disagree on these things, but in general, you know, there are a lot of positives to it. What happened in Arkansas apparently is that it didn't even go out as an announcement from the governor's office or from the Department of Education. Somebody signed on to a registration system and all of a sudden a message came up, no, this is no longer going to be accepted for high school credit. And think about all the teachers this summer who did all the work to prepare for this course, a college level course, and all the kids who were planning on having this credit that they could put to their graduation, and it just gets swept away by a bureaucrat's push of a button like that.
Yeah.
It's that idea again of just piling on to regular people who are just trying to do the right thing. want to do something admirable, take a college course, teach a college course, but because of the political ambitions of somebody like a Sarah Huckabee Sanders, now we have this disaster in Arkansas. It's really, the other thing too is that they're canceling AP African-American studies. They're not canceling AP European studies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So European history, which, you know, we know who is behind European history, right? That's fine. You can study that. But when it comes to people who actually live in this country, who built this country, who were the ones whose toil and whose degradation was the economic base that this country was built on. No, we can't talk about that because that's politically inexpedient for government.
No, but this is a good divisive tool is what it is, because it does two things. One, it divides people in the general populace. It divides parents because, you know, why do I want my kids, you know, to have to feel bad about this horrible stuff? And then more importantly, it gets people who are, you know, who are fed up, like the cashier at the grocery store going, I'm tired of dealing with craziness. I'll go do something else. It's the same thing with teachers. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a teacher shortage going on. And I thought it was a couple hundred thousand teachers nationwide that were short because people are just leaving.
I think it was in South Dakota, like in the last week or two. I apologize. I don't remember. I think it was South Dakota. Teacher of the year just decided, I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. And why was that? She was getting criticized for Facebook posts that on her own account that were supportive of LGBTQ folks. And apparently she was getting hassled and was getting all kinds of extra scrutiny of her work. And that is the sort of thing where it's like, hey, wait a second, you know, you're not paying me that much to begin with. You've put all this bureaucracy on top of me, on top of the job, where really what I want to do is teach. And now you add this to it. Why would anybody stay? You used the word divide though earlier, and I've been thinking about this. I'm a teacher, so I always think in mnemonic devices, right? What's going on? Divide is definitely one thing, but it's really three: divide, defund, destroy.
Right.
So the divide is over things like curriculum. That's the whole point of school choice, is that we're all going to go to our separate corners. We can't have one unifying experience of public school to bring us all together. We've just apparently given up on the American experiment, and everybody's going to go off and
that whole melting pot thing doesn't work anymore.
Right. But that is built on this chronic defunding of the public schools, which has been taking place. I think it's really important to understand this. The places where quote unquote school choice has been rising up have been these places where schools have been chronically defunded. Pennsylvania, great example. I mean, the legislature, just the last few weeks, the Republicans in the legislature came out and said, we have a school funding decision in Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania system has been found unconstitutional, right? And this was clear and unequivocal.
Right.
Now, how are we going to do that? And what do the Republicans say? More school choice. So it's defunding and dividing, and that's what leads to destroying.
No, as I say, you know, it's all about dividing us and then privatizing. You've gone a little bit further of explanation, but it's all the same. I mean, it's all about divide and conquer and then privatize and profitize.
Right. And you know, again, the upshot of this is what, you know, one of the biggest things that we're seeing right now is this fleeing from the teaching profession. Maybe I was foolish, but I actually was having some hope coming out of COVID, because there was a renewed sense that schools were important, teachers were important. There was a great fear that we were going to have a huge exodus out of the profession immediately following COVID. And while we had some attrition, it wasn't as big as we kind of feared. What's happened, unfortunately, though, is that the pipeline going in is it's slowly being turned off. And now we're getting it down to a dribble. We're seeing fewer and fewer people who are going into the profession. And part of that, you know, what happened again, what a crazy couple of weeks we've had. So the defunding of West Virginia University, I don't know how many of your listeners have been following this, but, you know, this is a school that is being basically stripped for parts at this point. And we're talking, there have been reports out about humanities being cut and programs in the sciences being cut. What's the one thing they're looking at? Education, defunding the education administration programs and special ed programs. West Virginia University, I double checked the data, is the biggest provider of teacher training in the state. Well, what happens when your flagship university shuts down teaching teachers? You put up yet another barrier toward people entering the profession.
See, this is where, if I can stop you here, this is where I disagree with you, because the conservative ideology is we don't need those credentials. We don't need you to go to those schools. What we need are we need theocrats to go in and teach the only book that really matters. I've got friends who have explained to me what the future of education is going to be, and it's not your government schools, Mark. It's not those government schools. It's going to be good, God-fearing Christian schools. We're going to teach kids what they need to know out of the good book. That's the mentality. So they don't care about education. They don't care about credentials. They don't care about any of that. They care about destroying the government schools.
There's one place where they do care about it, Rick, and that's for their own kids. Like a lot of these people, you know, they will defund somebody else's school, but they will pay a pretty penny for their kid to get the sort of education that they think is important. So then the argument that comes back from that is, well, you want to deny that to all kids. Let's have all kids have that private school education. Okay, are you willing to pay, what is it now at the Hill School where the Trump boys went? About $45,000 a year if you're not even living on the campus? Yeah. Are we willing to pay that much?
In fact, I had a state senator.
And the answer, of course, is not.
I had a state senator on, you know, several years back, who's now been outed, you know, out of office, had a sex scandal go on. But he was the guy who introduced one of the first voucher bills here in Pennsylvania. And I had asked him if his voucher bill, if I got this wonderful golden ticket, if I could send my kids to the Abington Friends School in Philadelphia, which I know charges, I think, like 45, 50 grand a year for kindergarten. And he told me, absolutely, you're going to get that. And his own bill didn't say that. His own bill said I would get what my school district paid and I would have to fork up the rest of it. But he didn't even know that. But they've sold this to people that, yeah, you're going to be okay because you're going to get this golden ticket. And this golden ticket is going to get you into those exclusive places like you just said, when the reality is that's not what it's about at all.
Yeah, you and I've talked about this before. There was education philosophy writer Martin Hollis wrote a paper years ago about education as a positional good. And it was the idea that my kids' education is enhanced by making their education better, but it's also enhanced by making your education worse. So if other kids aren't getting good education, but mine is, that is a net plus for me in this kind of way of thinking of positional goods. And it's indicative of what you were talking about in the previous segment about us being mean to each other, us not caring about each other, us not having civic values. You know, so many of our American civic values are tied up in the idea of free public schools available to everyone, teaching certain common core values. And it's disheartening to me to see how quickly some people want to throw that away. Having said that, poll after poll after poll after poll, time and time again, you will find people say that they are concerned about the state of education in America, but they will also say they love their own local school. They love their own kids' teacher. They love their own kids' principal. It's one of the great constants in polling that we see over and over again. People value being able to have their kid attend a public school that's democratically run, where everybody gets a say in a democratic process, where it's open, where it's transparent, and where it's free, and everybody who lives within the borders is served, is given an education. Yeah. It's sad to think about how quickly we want to throw that away for the promise of results that have been shown time and time again. I mean, every major study of major voucher programs has shown that they have worse outcomes. And don't believe the cherry pick nonsense that tells you otherwise. That's just, it's not true. But not only that, the idea that we would give up so easily that we can share some common values of tolerance, of decency, of patriotism. We should be able to have that common.
I agree with you.
Place where we all sit, and it's, again, it's, to me, it's sad and it frankly unpatriotic to give up on that so easily.
So this is where I want to finish up with this, because Florida is now going to start using these Prager University, Prager Kids videos that are the most generous I can be is a rewrite of history. I've been calling them Schoolhouse Rock for Nazis because that's basically what they are. I'm curious your thoughts.
I think you have to be our age to get that joke, Rick.
yeah, okay.
I'm not sure people in their 20s.
When I was a kid, back in the old days, we used to have cartoons.
Right.
And that's what these are. These are basically cartoons of rewritten history, basically saying, slavery wasn't a bad thing. It was, killing. What would you rather, instead of taking slaves, what would you rather have us do? Just kill them instead? I mean, there's a lot of craziness in these videos, Mark.
Yeah, I'm aware of some of the other things that Prager's done, and it's nonsense. But I didn't get until this past week to see some of the ones that they're actually going to allow to be used in Florida schools. And there was one with Frederick Douglass, and it was cartoon Frederick Douglass talking with two little kids who happen to be white, surprise, surprise, about how he was working within the system. And he was trying to change the system.
And the Constitution's a great document.
Right. Now, what I thought was the whole point of this is to stand up because there's a fear of indoctrination, except you couldn't find a better example of indoctrination than that. If you really cared about learning about Frederick Douglass, why wouldn't you use his own words? Why wouldn't, for example, you have a cartoon of Frederick Douglass giving his famous 4th of July speech, where he says, what is, what are Black Americans supposed to think about when the 4th of July is happening, right? And he talks about all of the deficiencies in the country, all the broken promises and so on. Why not have that? And the reason why is this is indoctrination. This is the hypocrisy of this movement, that the very thing you say you're standing up against, the very thing that you say you want to protect children for, you are engaging in the most egregious and the most historically unrepresented way possible. You're not giving kids Frederick Douglass's own words and letting them figure out for themselves what it means. You are literally rewriting what he says and then trying to sell it as some historical truth when in fact it's absolutely not. But again, what you said about homeschooling is absolutely correct. Hey, can I say one thing real quick? We lost the last couple of weeks a great champion of public education. Darcy Simarusti was the comms director at the Network for Public Education. She was a blogger here in New Jersey. She was known as Mother Crusader. She worked tirelessly on behalf of public schools. She had a long battle with cancer, and I already miss her. We got to keep this fight going for Darcy. We got to keep this fight going for her family. We got to keep this fight going for everybody like her who cherished public schools, cherished what they did for her family. So, you know, Darcy, all of our love to you and your family.
So what can people do? I mean, you know, the reality is you're right. You know, when I talk to people, you know, they believe there's so much going on out there that they don't see. They've been sold that, you know, all of this indoctrination and grooming is happening, that there are drag shows in every classroom and every library in the country is full of books trying to turn their children one way or another. And that, you know, that's out there. Now, their school's okay, because as you've pointed out, their teacher's okay, but we got to protect all those others. What right. do we do? I mean, because the right is organized, and there's a lot of money behind this. You know, the Jeffrey Yazes of the world and the big funders who want to destroy, you know, the Betsy DeVosses who want to destroy public education. What do people do?
So there was a great story out of Granbury, Texas, tiny little district, I get it in Texas, which, of course, is Greg Abbott's Texas. And, you know, as egregious as Florida in terms of destroying schools. Rural Texas schools in particular are taking a huge hit. And a school board member, conservative, radically right wing, got herself onto the board, sneaks into the high school and turns off the lights in the library, thinking she's not going to get caught. And she's there with her phone and taking pictures of books, trying to find smut. And the assistant principal walks by and sees this flashing light going. This is like early in the morning, I guess, sees this flashing light in the library when it's dark. And he goes over, what's going on? And he finds this person and there's a whole thing. And the superintendent apparently, and I think the principal too, stand up to this school board member. And apparently the community does too. These people have gone too far. And it's because even if you are adamantly on the political right, even to you, you know, these people are going too far. They're making life impossible for your kids' teachers. They're making it impossible for your principals. They are ruining the schools. They are not protecting the investment that we're making in the schools. What we need are more teachers, administrators, parents, concerned citizens standing up to these people and saying, that's enough. That's enough. We're not putting up with this anymore. You know, again, there was a parent who went viral in Houston this week, standing up to Mike Miles, the state-appointed superintendent, who decided to turn all the libraries into discipline center.
And detention centers, yeah.
And this mom, she's one mom, but she stood up and she said, that's it. Enough's enough. I'm not putting up with that anymore. It's going to take that. But people are out there. They care about their schools. They love their schools. If we stay organized, if we stay engaged, we're going to ride this out because this is not what people want.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, politicians are going to go along with what people want. At least that.
I hope you're right.
That is my.
I'm concerned about the future for kids in this country. If they're watching their parents do the kind of things that you just said, breaking into libraries, the kind of antics that I see at school board meetings of people making threats. I mean, these are the role models that these kids are going to grow up to emulate. And this idea that we don't respect each other. And, you know, like I said, you know, Brooks piece about, you know, how'd we get so mean? This is a huge part of this.
Well, you know, my favorite political philosopher of the 20th century was George Carlin.
Yes.
And George Carlin, I think, nailed it. He said, what the owners of this country do not want is a well-educated populace, a populace
capable of critical thought.
Well-informed and capable of critical thinking. That's right. And so that's the other thing you got to remember about all of this. Is it about these scam artists making money off of school vouchers and charter school real estate deals? Sure, a part of it's about that. Is part of it about deunionization? Sure, part of it is about that. But really the core of it is about having a compliant, poorly educated population. So you know what the best thing I think maybe you could do to stand up against this, pick up a good book and read it. You know, get your news from good sources. Show your kids that's the responsibility that you have for being a member of a democratic society. Educate yourself. And if we do that, then, you know, we the people should be able to withstand. I hope we'll be able to withstand this storm.
Then there might be hope. At least that's my belief. I'm with you, Mark. It's interesting times.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And